Welcome to Embracing the Muse. I'm your host, Sally Jean Fox, the author of Meeting the Muse After Midlife. And I'm on a quest to discover and understand how we can live our richest, most meaningful, and creative lives at any age, and especially as we age. And I'll be interviewing island creatives to discover what they can share with us about the highs and lows, ups and downs, and possibilities of living and sustaining a creative life. I am thrilled today to bring you Renee Marceau. I met her during the Vashon Island Wonderful Studio Tour when I got to visit her studio. And I walked in, it's in a beautiful wood building, it's on the upper level. I walked in, it was like I was in a little paradise. Not only is it a beautiful building, and if you have an opportunity to visit, you really should, but it was full of really interesting things. There were shells and pine cones and feathers and little rocks and found objects, many of which Renee had organized, put together in what she called assemblage. Is that the way you say it, Renee?
I say assemblage.
Assemblage. I was making it a little French there for us.
Sounds great. I have a French name.
So you have a French name and all. And so I want to say thank you so much for coming on this rainy June day to visit Voice of Vashon. And what is assemblage? Now that you've corrected my pronunciation and I can say the good old U.S. way, what is assemblage? What is different about it than just putting stuff together in a pile?
Good question. Interesting. I mean, I don't know the exact definition of it, but assemblage, from my point of view, is that you are putting together objects. I use objects from nature, artifacts from my farming, or kind of other ancestral artifacts. And it's dimensional. And the assemblages I create are things that either can be hanging on the wall, or they can be on, you know, a tabletop standing kind of, but they're sculptural. That's kind of how I think of my assemblages, as sculptural.
It certainly seems so. And what I liked is that you were taking found objects and inviting the viewer to see them in a different way. So not only were you highlighting the beauty that was there anyway, in a pine cone or in a feather, but it was like you were inviting us to come into a journey to say, hey, look, if I put these together, how does that make you feel? Or how would you see things different? Is that part of your intention?
Absolutely. I think of myself as a pattern seeker. And so when I'm putting things together, or I begin with a pine cone, for example, or something, there's something about that object or the patterns that I see that I want to kind of bring attention to. And what I'm most curious about is how to elevate what's already beautiful in nature, but to see that in a slightly different way, maybe coupled or in context with more than just one other thing that highlights a similarity or something that you just wouldn't normally associate as being similar. For example, how do barnacles cluster together? And then when you look at a honeycomb, like there's some patterning there that's kind of similar. So I try to do, whenever I'm working with nature and these natural objects, I'm just trying to highlight, like I said before, sort of elevate the beauty that's already there. I mean, I think nature's so beautiful that, you know, you can't really make nature more beautiful. So I'm actually just an assembler of things that are made in nature.
Mm. The words just an assembler seem to, they don't do justice to the eye that you bring to it. Mm. And I remember I have studied Ikebana, And the Ikebana teachers, that sometimes called Japanese flower arranging, although that's not the way they like to talk about it, because what they're doing is looking at flowers and natural material, which are already beautiful, and saying, if we are going to use this material, we have to add something to it. We have to allow the eye to see it in a different way. Otherwise, nature is beautiful out there, and the flowers can remain out there. So what is it that we can add? And I think that's a really challenging question.
I completely agree. I don't think that that's something you can really teach someone by words. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I don't know where I picked that up, to be honest. You know, my background's in graphic design, and I've just been reflecting about how grateful I am actually to have had that as sort of a foundation of just really looking at positive, negative space, patterns, contrast, gradation, you know, just like some of these very fundamental patternings that you would see naturally in nature. And then how do you bring nature in, work with it, do this assemblage where you're still bringing these same concepts, if I want to say, that you have in nature, but probably you're not always consciously aware of it, right? And bring them in, not that you're consciously aware of it when you see the piece either, but by bringing in those same things as you're applying it to your creative making, I think that's when we're still working in sync in with those pieces of nature, you know, the patterns and things, and elevating it in some capacity.
So it sounds like you know, the graphic design training you had, did you do formal education in graphic design?
I did.
University degree or?
I do. I have a degree from University of Washington.
Oh, congratulations. Yeah.
Yeah, BFA.
Yet you were able to take the design concepts that you'd learned and go out in the world and look at and see how they played out in real life or in nature, and also probably take the nature and have that educate your design eye.
Yeah. I've been collecting objects and, you know, natural objects since I was a child. And then as an adult, like this whole journey for me as an adult just started with collecting things, and they started on my windowsills and, you know, shelves in my house. But I've always been, I don't know, I guess that's what's so interesting about different artists is that we all have a slightly different, unique perspective and way of seeing the world. And hopefully that's what each person offers, is some new way to invite the viewer to see something. So I've just been assembling and putting things together in my own ways.
Did you do that as a child? Because in your bio, you spoke about loving nature.
I loved it
all along. So were you assembling things when you were a little kid?
I was. I didn't really put all the dots together until my mom, who just saved so many things that I did as a child. And then, you know, they all go into boxes and drawers. And then finally, when you're like in your 20s or 30s, they're like, here, have this. And I rediscovered some things that I had assembled as a child from a lot of my beach combing and walks in nature, because we spent a lot of time on beaches when I was a child. And most of them were a little more, you know, like faces and things like that. So not as abstract or exactly, you know, what I'm doing today. But the interest of assembling things was there. And I've always been very interested in more dimensional aspect of things, although I didn't quite figure that out until later, like books and bookbinding and, you know, like just, yeah, I don't know, just always have been interested in that.
Being in your studio sparked my imagination. Because as a child, I used to roam the woods and I would pick up arrowheads and pine cones and stones as if they were treasures. Mm-hmm. And I'd fill my pockets and I'd bring them back to our property and I'd find some little secret place to store them. But I never knew what to do with them from there. I just knew that they had some magic and I really loved them. But how to honor that magic And as an adult, you can't have, you know, you don't have little stashes all around, but maybe you could have stashes all around your property. But the idea that you could go one step further and assemble them into something that would have an ongoing beauty or an ongoing meaning to you. I love that idea.
And I have to confess that, I mean, there was a hurdle for me to go and a threshold to kind of go over to actually embrace what I'm doing now. And I was invited into a show actually at Valise well over a decade ago.
Which is a shop on downtown Vashon Island, if people don't
gallery,
know the island.
Yeah, yeah. Collective
gallery.
Yeah. And I was invited to participate and I could, you know, show whatever I wanted. And what I really wanted to do was to show, to put, you know, do these assemblages. And I was speaking with another artist friend of mine on Vashon and, you know, kind of lamenting like, I want to do this, but it's not legitimate.
Ah.
Most of my art making to that time had been more in printmaking.
Mm-hmm.
And I had dabbled in photography and some digital stuff because that actually related a lot to my professional background. So I kind of needed that little support and push. And then when I did that and put these pieces in this group show, I had a really positive response from, you know, from people, you know, artists, my fellow artists and other viewers. And and then I put that same year, I believe, I submitted a piece to the miniature show that VCA usually holds in December.
The Performance and Art Association here on the island.
Right. Vashon Center for the Arts now. And they have a requirement that the piece can be no larger. I believe it was 5 inches by 5 inches. So I thought, well, what am I going to do? So I created these 3-inch by 3-inch little balsa wood boxes and created something and put it in. And again, I got a really great response and I really enjoyed that particular format. And so a whole series kind of sprung from that particular thing. So it's interesting how these opportunities arose and
it is interesting. And it also says, it speaks to what we do to ourselves to create the obstacles, because I hear, you know, I have a friend who is doing scrapbooking and she's super talented. And she said, well, I'm here on an island with so many real artists. I don't want to mention that I'm doing scrapbooking. Well, her scrapbooks are super artful. They're very creative. And it just made me think, why do we do that? Why do we think that there's this category called real artists? And in order to display and share what we do, we have to earn that Boy Scout badge. It's called Real Artists. And I don't even know if real artists call themselves real artists. You know what I mean?
I do. Yeah. I do. I hear you. I have actually struggled for years with the whole label of artist. And because I think at the heart of it for myself, I mean, I'm now at a place where I've just accepted that I just say I'm an artist because people can understand that, you know, and, you know, anyways. But for me, what's actually much more engaging and exciting to me is to live an artistic life. That's way more interesting to me. And it doesn't matter if you're scrapbooking or you're designing your garden or you're cooking up an incredible meal at one point in my personal journey, the other term that I came up with that really resonated for me was to live a handmade life. And, you know, I've just always been interested in doing things with my hands and making things with my hands. What you see in my studio is just one expression of what I do that I've packaged as an artist, quote unquote, you know what I mean, and put out there. But that is only one part of who I am. Do you know what I'm saying?
I do. And I want to super underscore it because I want to put it on like neon that it's not about being an artist no. as much as living an artistic life
yes.
or as you in your parlance, a handmade life. But I think that really invites everyone to find what moves them into this sense of artfulness, attentiveness, communion with the world around, or whatever it might look like, instead of worrying so much about, are we good enough? Are we artists? Are we acceptable in the na-na-na-na-na? And those things that I think are creativity killers.
Totally. I totally agree with you. So, because then it gets me to be curious about the question of, you know, what are the qualities and capacities you want to cultivate to live an artistic life?
You know? What have you discovered? Because that's a brilliant question.
For me, I think, okay, so a few things come to mind. So definitely a sense of curiosity. First I want to preface this, that this for me, it's a practice, like a daily practice. There isn't like you achieve it and then then you're done and you're gonna, to me, it's like we fall off, we are back on, we fall off, you know, to all of this. So to me, it's like, so cultivating that sense of curiosity, so to me, when I say that, there's like a sense of openness to be willing to consider something new, to see something from different eyes, to be willing to be wrong. Do you know what I mean? Like to be able to change and grow and learn. So that is a very, that's a capacity that I think one wants to bring to living a life that's creative. You know, I mean, let's leave the artistic kind of over on the side, because I think culturally we have so many.
It's a lot of baggage around that. Yeah.
With that. But just being being creative. And so creative is generative. You want to be doing things, in my opinion, of creating a mindset that feeds life. Those are the words I use. Things that uplift the soul. Things that just are generative in general. And so for me, that can be everything from just being very attentive and cultivating also a sense of self-awareness and capacity to be willing to reflect, like what language am I using? What stories am I telling myself inside as well as to other people? Like, what are the thoughts and the patterns that I have that I'm living into that are actually uplifting me versus thwarting life or pushing down? So I think those are capacities that are just at the core of creating a generative, creative, learning, growing life that you're going to be excited to get up in the morning for, you know.
Here, I'm totally with you. And it also leads one to think, every day is a creative opportunity.
Absolutely.
It's not just about getting into the studio or working on a particular project, but it's also, how am I creating my life?
Yeah.
What messages am I choosing to follow? Where is my attention and my curiosity leading me? And being more conscious, maybe. Yeah. Of some of those questions.
And I would say not just even every day, I'd say every moment.
Every moment. There you go.
Because a part of being creative and et cetera is actually staying present in my view and experience. And now I by no means am doing that 100% whatsoever. I'd be glad if I was doing it 51% of the time, you know, just enough, maybe more than that for sure, you know, but so that, you know, you're seeing the world as the glass is half full versus half empty, like those more generative things. And I do think that at, you know, every moment we have a choice about what we want to focus on. You know, are the stories we're telling ourselves making it so we're dwelling in the past or worrying about the future, or can we just be here, you know?
Can you give us an example of how you might have had to recalibrate, you know, like your point of view on something or the way you had to look at life or look at an incident to be able to move beyond the old story, the old past, the easy, if dismal, you know?
Okay. Yeah. Wow. That's a really good question. And boy, I mean, I think what comes to mind first, which is very personal, is actually probably my relationship with my spouse, with my husband, my life partner. You know, it's just, it's so easy to want to get in a rut of focusing on what's not working or what you don't like. And I mean, you could actually pick anybody really, but about that, actually including yourself, to be honest. But I would say that I've observed that that the more I can do the inner work, I mean, okay, so at the end of the day, in my book, it's an inside job. That's the way that I kind of look at it. So, you know, to be able to sort of, to be able to hold a space, and again, this is a practice where it's like, oh, what if I focused on what I love about this person, you know, and what if I also know what my boundaries are and what the shortcomings or the challenges I have in my spouse or whoever you want to slot in there, and make sure that I'm setting boundaries so I'm not getting myself into situations where it's actually emphasizing the parts that are challenging, if that makes sense. So, so I mean, again, that's a practice. I by no means
get no, but that it, well, it but suggests that to be able to live this kind of handmade, creative, artful life requires inner work.
Because
it's not just about what you're doing out there; it's also about how you're working in here.
Exactly, and I think the piece I want to emphasize in doing that is, in my experience, as I'm doing that, and I find that many of the challenges and storylines that I hold about myself that might be hard for me are probably exactly the same ones that other people hold, or even my spouse. It's just being expressed differently because we're different people. We have different formative experiences in our life that, you know. But there are these kind of archetypal, you know, sort of journeys and things that we go through that I think are similar for everybody. And so I guess my point that I'm trying to make is that by going inward, it's like, oh, there's this great quote by Brené Brown. I really like Brené Brown. I don't know if you're familiar
with
her.
Yeah, all the work that she's done on vulnerability and Absolutely. Imperfection and inspiring so many people.
Yes, yeah. Yes. See if I can remember it. It's about belonging. And true belonging is believing in and knowing yourself so deeply that you can share your most authentic self with the world. And you can both be a part of something greater and stand alone in your own wilderness. So my point here is that when doing the inside work, there's both what I have found is you find these places that are shared, but then at the same time, it's your own unique journey. And so you have to own that too. Mm-hmm. And so all of this inner work, it's definitely informs my creative outlets.
Well, I was thinking about that. And could you just say the Brené Brown quote again? Because I have a reason. I think it's so connected to an artistic practice, but I'd love to have you say it again.
Okay, let me
paraphrase.
See if I can
doesn't have
that.
To be accurate.
True belonging is believing in and knowing yourself so deeply that you're willing to share your most authentic self with the world, while knowing that you're both part of something much greater, and you can stand alone in your own wilderness.
It's beautiful. When you were reading it, and in the context of this conversation, I was thinking that is also kind of an artist credo, because to really produce something that comes from a special spot is very vulnerable.
Totally. Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. To put your work out there that you've been, you know, like, absolutely. Don't even have words for it, because it is so vulnerable. Like when I first put out these assemblages from nature, that was super vulnerable, because this is what really spoke to me and what had heart and meaning for me. And as a matter of fact, actually, my very first series that I did actually really generated and came from having done a vision quest out in the wilderness and some very deep personal work that was a nature immersion context. And so it was very vulnerable. And although people couldn't tell what my personal story was, it was what informed the creative making that I was doing.
You write in your bio that, and I'll put that in the show notes, but that you took a year at one point to really spend more time in nature. What led to that, and what did you discover as a result of that year?
That's interesting. Yes, and actually what I was just speaking of is that. So I did a year-long nature program or nature immersion program. It wasn't that I was in nature that entire year, but it was a year-long program with a group of people, and we met four or five times throughout that year in some amazing nature context. And it was centered around doing, you know, going inward and doing your work. But some of the premise was that if you go out in nature and you engage in a conversation with nature and you're bringing your personal story, what nature will mirror back to you is your own inner nature. And that was sort of that was my experience by going out into nature, and there were various practices that were offered that we could do. Nature just can hold this most amazing neutral space for one to just be in wherever they're at in their life. So that's what I had done that 1 year and plus. And let's see, what was your question? How did it lead up to that? Was your question?
Yeah. How did that year? Why did you want to do that? And then how did that inform what resulted in terms of your own creative practice?
Yeah. Okay. So I've always been a bit of a seeker. Not a bit.
Yeah. Really. Yeah. We don't have to downplay that. You've always been a seeker.
I've always been a seeker. I've been a seeker of really the unseen world, you know, very curious and always asking questions about that. So there's been many different threads that I've followed in regards to that. But I'm thinking in particular that led to this particular year is I've always actually also been interested in dream work. And I've used that as a source for self-awareness, understanding, exploration, creativity, all sorts of ways. So I had been doing dream work, and I ran across the work of Bill Plotkin is the name of the gentleman who founded Animus Valley Institute. The first one of the programs they did was using dreams and such. And so somehow, it's so funny, I can't quite remember the sequence of events, but all of this kind of led into me finding these programs that deeply resonated for me. I actually, now that I'm thinking back on this, I had been in the Zen practice and Vipassana and done all sorts of different things. And I got tired of being inside all the time. And while I have a great respect and love for these traditions and ritual and practice, I really had a deep longing and desire to be in the natural world. And so that work of doing this kind of personal work in nature was very appealing to me. And so I went and I did this work. And I'll just give you an example of like one of the pieces that unfolded for me around that year. So I was, I had a personal story that I was working with and kind of bringing that with me on my walks and immersion. And I found an object while I was in nature, and it was this, it looked like a horn, and it was kind of it was from a tree. It looked like a horn, and it was a knot. And I didn't really, it captured my attention, because a lot of when I'd been in nature from a child, what I'm always walking through, and then if there's something unusual that I see, you know, it could be a common leaf, but there's an unusual pattern, or it could be a knot, but it's unusual shape or something. So I found this knot and I brought it back and I just sat with it. And I was working with a lot of emotion. And so I was working with knots of emotion inside. And so this tree knot became a metaphor for me. And I did some work with that. And I, rather than going down this whole road, long story short, is this knot became a personal, what do I say? It was like a symbol of my own personal story of something that I found in nature. And through my work, I redefined my relationship with that story, right? And so I called this knot the knotted horn of longing. And I would go through, and on my walks, I would start finding them. And I started to accumulate quite a collection of these. And through this year, one of the years of these nature immersions, I was using this knot. And I realized that I needed to gift the original one that I had found, that I was almost grasping it too tightly. And so I gifted it back to nature just as a release. And then I realized that this knot was kind of like a horn. And so, and rather than it just staying as energy bound, it was like visioning this energy expressing from it. And so then all of a sudden these knots, I don't know where I got the idea, but I made rattles out of them. And so that knotted horn of longing became the handle for the rattle. And then the rattle you could shake. And so it was like a vehicle or a tool for doing that. And so I started making these rattles. I did I think in 2013, 14, somewhere in there, I did a small show in town here on Vashon Island. And I did a whole series of rattles. I probably did about 6 or 7 of them with these. And I had accumulated these knots on the beaches that were very unusual. Like I found some that had barnacles on them, like things that you would only one of a kind sort of thing. And I started making rattles and I've continued to make them to this day. Like it's just, so that's like, you wouldn't, you know, you'd see these knots and you'd see my collection of it and be like, oh yeah, whatever. But there's a whole story that I have behind this.
I love that. I love that story, Renee. And it also suggests the power of this artful living, this art making without being totally tied to production, because eventually you were able to sell rattles, but the journey was one that changed you.
Absolutely. It's process. It's the process that you have and the journey, absolutely, that you have with it. And this is by no means like I make them and sell them regularly or whatever. These are ceremonial rattles in my opinion.
I hear you. And need to be honored. It's almost like you, it's not a living being, but you created something that is worthy of respect. So you wouldn't want to just like not like you're going to mass produce them, but you want them to go to people who can hold them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or yeah.
Respected. Respect and, whatever is in that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
So that was a long story to kind of illustrate one little example.
Do you ever get caught up, and I say this somewhat from a personal perspective because it's a question that I sometimes struggle with the question of whether people will like your art or will buy your art. Are you able to insulate yourself from those questions when you're in the process of creating, or do they sometimes come in and nibble at your ears?
You know, to be honest, I don't ever think about that.
Lucky you.
I don't know why. It's not that I haven't. Yeah. I'm not terribly concerned at this point. Like, they're definitely, you know, during the art tour, I think every artist experiences this. There's people who come through and they'll go through quickly and hi, bye. And, you know, it's just like, oh, that's not their gig. And then others, it's the opposite. No, because I'm not making my art from that place.
And you're not trying to support yourself on your
I'm not.
Assemblage
and I think
sales.
It would be different if this was really the business that I was trying to support myself from. I think boy, that's like a whole other perspective and energy that you're carrying into the studio for art making.
And
for
a weight.
A weight. For me, my art is, it's a conversation. It's a prayer. It's my meditation. It's, you know, like if I find that when I'm not creating for long periods of time, I'm like, oh, I'm getting grumpy. Like, what's going on? You know, it's like, oh, I need to go into my studio.
I totally get it. I hear you. Well, especially with the world, there's so much we can't change in the world, so much that's difficult.
Yeah.
So to be able to go back to a place where we can find ourselves.
Yes.
And give ourselves to a process that can then give us back some of that life.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And it's not just art that does that for people too. Like, you know, it could be regular walks in nature, having a heart-to-heart conversation with, you know, a trusted friend. You know, there's many ways to kind of find yourself again, but there's something about art making that it's just about you and nobody else, you know. And I think that maybe goes back to your question of, am I ever thinking, will this sell? Well, then it's not just about me anymore. That's what it was like as a designer, right? As a designer, the end product was never for me. It was for my client. So I had to design in terms of what my client's needs were. And I would present, you know, three options, whatever. And they may not pick my most favorite one that I think is the strongest. And you just got to go with it, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah. You know what I mean? It's different.
It is different. Well, it's real exciting that you are going to start teaching assemblage. How are you, since a lot of this seems to come out of an inner sensitivity and receptiveness to the materials and all, how the heck are you going to teach?
Yeah. Oh, good question. Well, this again is a new threshold for me to walk through, and I'm excited. You know, there's not definitely little fluttering of anticipation because it's the first time. But one of the things I'm really excited about is to actually bring some of the practices that I did do in the nature immersion to the experience of the day. It's just a day workshop, you know, together. To my invitation is that people can bring with them objects and things they've already found, but not necessary, but have already done that. And I'll set the container. I really like poetry as a way to ignite or set a container that kind of can bring you into a more liminal space or something that's beyond just the scene world, you know, can kind of open you up. So I'm going to be bringing some poetry to kind of help that. And then I'd like to actually send people out on wanders on the land, on our property. And and just have a moment to actually be with themselves in nature and see what they find, like what do they encounter, and kind of settle into themselves. And then from there, come back into the studio and start creating your personal assemblage. And I'll share some of my, you know, tips and tricks. But people can do whatever they want. And then I'd love to close with just, you know, a sharing of what the day was like for people, what was ignited. And I'm interested too in the process, like we were talking before, the journey, the personal journey. Doesn't matter so much what you created, doesn't have to be perfect, but like what was stirred inside of you while you were in that making? And, you know, hopefully something comes out that's maybe not even what you anticipated, you know? So that's what I'm hoping to help facilitate.
Sounds super yummy. And I will leave in the show notes how people can be in touch with you. Mm-hmm. What's the best way to be in touch with you? On your website or?
Yeah, I have a website, reneemarceau.com. And I'm also on Instagram, which I think is renee-marceau. And, you can reach me through both of those, places, and, I can give you more information.
Great. And we'll put info in the Voice of Vashon show notes for this episode. In closing, and this is going to be a trick question, and so be free to say whatever you want with it, but what one thing might you offer to somebody who said, you know, I'm so inspired by you. How can I live a more artful life?
What would I do? Like in the moment, you know, it's just kind of individual and like what you sort of, you know, what's with the person. But I think I would just take time for yourself, you know, and just listen. Like what's your deepest desires? And like really follow that. And you know, another piece for me is like find other people that inspire you and actually hang out with them. Like hang out with the people that inspire you, you know, and that kind of elevate, you know, your sense of wellness and maybe mirror back, you know, the parts of you that you really love and want to experience or are interested in stepping into, you know, new places. So
I'm sorry for putting you on the spot, but those are great answers because the sense of paying attention to where you're being led and what turns you on and what inspires you and which pine cone you are fascinated by.
Yeah.
And then hanging out with the people who get it,
yeah,
who get who you are, but also maybe get what you're doing, you know, this quest to become more attentive and mindful and fascinated by the world.
Yeah. There's some great David White poems that I love. I don't know if you're familiar with his work. I think it's called something darkness in there. But you know, plans that you make sometimes they're too small for you. You know, it's like let the mystery in a little bit.
Let the mystery in.
Yeah.
I love that. Well, that's a great note to close on. And I knew we would have a wonderful conversation. And over here, I have loved every moment. So thank you so much for coming into the studio today.
Thank you, Sally.
Thanks so much for listening. I look forward to being back soon and bringing you another conversation with an island creative who can show you how it's possible to embrace your muse and live your richest and most creative life. Till then, thanks for joining us, and thanks to Voice of Vashon, 101.9 FM, for hosting this show. I'm your host, Sally Fox, and I look forward to being with you soon.